The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
We've been following breaking news throughout the afternoon, and let's continue right now with our Big Lead coverage.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
You know the story that went down yesterday afternoon down in Burien, a car rolling by targeting a father and son walking down the street. They didn't hit the father or the son, but a stray bullet went through the window of a chiropractic office and killed the receptionist, a 51-year-old woman named Gabriela Reyes, described as a religious mother and grandmother. Absolute horrible tragedy. About 90 minutes ago, we got word the two suspects were arrested, and the arrests actually came down last night, but were just announced 90 minutes ago. I want to welcome to the studio, joining us live, King County Sheriff Sergeant Ryan Abbott, and I really appreciate you coming in this afternoon, Sergeant.
Yeah, of course, Dory. Thank you for having me.
Let's start with just the scope of this human tragedy, which I know deeply affects everybody in law enforcement when you have to respond to and investigate what is such a senseless, horrible, tragic death.
And you said it right just there. It's extremely tragic. It was, I think it was hard for all the deputies on scene. And I know that the detectives, our King County Major Crimes Detectives, they always do an amazing job on all these cases. But I know that they really were working hard to get this one solved as quickly as possible, which is exactly what they did.
And so Ms. Reyes sadly was dead at the scene, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, so you immediately have to quickly try to find these killers. And so kind of walk me through chronologically, because the first report we got was you initially thought there were four people in an SUV targeting a father and son who were walking down the sidewalk. So let's start with father and son. He had just picked a 39-year-old dad had just picked his 15-year-old son up at Highline High School.
Yeah, that's correct. And they were walking westbound on 152nd going towards First Avenue. Turns out that there were some words between the 39-year-old father and the occupants of the SUV. We've got some history, it looks like, with the father, where he's actually a documented gang member with Sereno Gang. And he had some words with the back and forth with the SUV occupants. And then the occupants of the SUV fired multiple shots. I don't even know how many yet at the 39-year-old, missing him, also missing his 15-year-old son. And again, tragically going through the window, the front window of the chiropractic office and hitting the victim there.
And how far away was the chiropractic window from the father and son that were actually targeted?
Oh, I'd say several hundred feet. It was quite a distance.
Okay. All right. So can you tell me, whatever you're able to tell me about the investigation, because you were rather quickly, within about 8 hours, you were able to not only have identified but arrest these two suspects. So tell me about that investigation.
Yeah, so the detectives, I would say almost all of our major crimes detectives were out there working on this case, and a lot of them had worked that area, the Southwest Precinct area, so they knew a lot of the people involved in different past crimes and different things. So we had a lot of cooperative witnesses, which is always great in a case like this, and the information that they were able to obtain had them go check an address nearby off of AmBomb, and they were looking for a specific SUV. And at that point, they had a pretty good idea of these suspects on who they were, and they ended up finding the SUV parked at the apartment complex.
Okay, and you identified two 17-year-olds who became the prime suspects. Can you tell me how the arrest went down?
Yeah, so we found the SUV. We had a bunch of different of our detective units, plainclothes detective units that surrounded the apartment. And just prior to our TAC 30 SWAT team getting there, three subjects came out of that apartment, the one that we believed that the suspects were in, and they got in a different car and left. So they were followed just a short distance away, and our SWAT team was able to do a traffic stop on them and take all three people in the vehicle into custody there. And then after interviews, they determined that it was just the two suspects, the ones that we were looking for in the vehicle there.
So the third guy in the traffic stop is not a suspect?
No, he was not.
Okay.
He was not there.
When you believe that these guys had opened fire on the street at 3:30 in the afternoon, that has to be an incredibly I mean, I know that there's no routine traffic stops, but when you know the type of person you're likely dealing with, that has to be just the absolute red alert for the officers involved in that stop.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. And so that's why we're able to call our SWAT team, and they are able to respond fairly quickly on a lot of these, and they can do the real high-risk vehicle stop, and that's exactly what this was, an extremely high-risk vehicle stop.
Okay. The father and son who were targeted, you said you believe the father was gang-affiliated. Is the 15-year-old son as well?
No, we do not believe that the 15-year-old is.
Okay. What kind of danger are they in now if two gang members have been arrested but the rest of their gang is out there?
Yeah, and we've seen that quite a bit over the past, which is retaliation shootings. So it's very possible that it could happen in the future. We don't know for sure, and it's just something that they have to be aware of and something we're as police aware of.
So the two 17-year-olds, where are they right now?
They got booked last night into the youth service center for investigation of murder. And then because of their age, it'll ultimately be up to the prosecutor's office, but most likely it'll be they'll be over to the adult.
Is that not automatic for a 17-year-old?
Usually, I believe it is at 16. Yes.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, all right. Okay, so they're facing the charges now. The gang problem. I was very frustrated earlier, and by the way, I've been very complimentary about the King County Sheriff's Department because it was so quick that you guys were able to make these arrests, and I do want to congratulate your colleagues in the department. I was really frustrated earlier because I saw politicians last night tweeting about this. They want to put signs in gun shops. Is there any evidence that these 17-year-olds purchased their gun at a gun shop?
No, they'd be too young to purchase them anyway. So, no, you're right.
Yeah.
There.
I get very frustrated. And then the other question that I always ask, and I don't know to what extent you can address this, because I know that there are certain county policies. Do we know the immigration status of these 17-year-olds and their family?
Yeah, we don't ask. We don't know.
So we'll never know.
Correct.
Is that something? Because I've seen the jail forms, and there's a box for immigration status, and it's always left blank now. And it seems to me that as this continues, because I've talked to Mayor Mata in Burien, there's been a lot of talk about Burien being a sanctuary city. You know, he's come on my show and discussed, and he's a supporter of that, and I have questions about it. Wouldn't it be a valuable piece of data in the public debate if we simply knew the status of the people who are allegedly committing crimes?
Yeah, it's probably going to be something for the sheriff to answer, because as far as our policy goes, it's something we don't talk about.
You're just not allowed to even ask the question.
Correct.
Okay. There was another shooting yesterday in Skyway that you guys are dealing with, and this was a 22-year-old, as I understand, 22-year-old African-American woman driving down the street, shot in the head and killed?
Yeah, that's correct.
And do you believe she was targeted?
We believe that she was. We don't think it was a random shooting.
Okay. And do you know any of the circumstances surrounding that shooting that make you believe she was targeted?
I haven't been made aware of exactly what those circumstances are. I do know it happened at about 10:45 last night, and we are looking for currently a dark sedan or black-colored sedan that was possibly in that area. So we're hoping anybody in that area that maybe saw something could contact the King County Sheriff's Office to give us some tips on this.
Okay. Several months ago, there were two teenage girls who were murdered in Burien, 13 and 19 years old. And as I understand it, there was a group of several dozen youths, you know, up to young adults with this 19-year-old, obviously. But they were just outside of an apartment complex. Again, likely gang-related. Gunfire opens up. Still no leads, no suspects in that shooting?
I know that our detective has been working on that as well, and I know that they have made a lot of progress on it. We have not gotten to the point yet that they've been able to charge anybody, but I know that they're still working on that case. I actually just talked to them last week about it, so I know they're still actively working on it.
And I know the incredible, I mean, I don't know it. I can't truly empathize with it because I don't walk in the shoes of the men and women who serve. But I can certainly guess the frustration when you're trying to solve the murder of two teenage girls and nobody will talk. I mean, that is the code of the street. That's the code of these gangs, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot of times that's the problem we run into. Thankfully, this one that we just dealt with in Burien, we did have people that were able to talk to us. But a lot of times, you're absolutely right. That's a hard thing for detectives when they get nobody that's assisting or helping out to let us know what happened.
And in a case like that, you're just always open to any tips from the public, I assume.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Yeah, so these 13 and 19-year-old girls, and those are murders that remain unsolved. Well, as I said, Sergeant, it was just really fantastic police work. And I also, like I said, I understand the danger of the for the deputies who made the traffic, or deputies or detectives who made that traffic stop, because they're putting their life on the line when they're dealing with people who are opening fire on a sunny Wednesday afternoon, just in the middle of the day. So I know the danger that all of you face when you are in a situation like that.
And thanks, Dory. We appreciate your support. I think the most important thing here is just that we're able to get a little bit of closure for that family with something so tragic like that. So it was great that the detectives were able to act on something and make an arrest so quickly.
Yeah. All right. So two in custody, 17 years old, believed to be gang related. And that doesn't, you know, there's no balancing act when you have a 51-year-old woman who's innocently cut down like that. There's no equivalency for a life that's taken like that. But it is a little comforting to know that the suspected shooters are off the street. Sergeant, I really appreciate you coming in the studio. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dory, for having me.
All right, Sergeant Ryan Abbott with the King County Sheriff's Office joining us and getting you all of the details of this shooting last night. There's one other police story that I want you to be aware of. It's one we've talked about an awful lot the last several days on this show, ever since surveillance video became available, was released from what was really a terror incident at the downtown Seattle Target store. It happened a few weeks ago, but the surveillance video was just obtained by our news partners at Cairo 7. And you know about that story, that there was a guy with a criminal history as long as my arm, and he is roaming around this Target store. He has stolen duffel bags and clothes from the nearby Columbia Sportswear. He still has the tags from the stolen clothes that he was wearing dangling off of him. He's walking around this Target store, desperate to steal as much as he can, to shove as much high return stuff into those duffel bags. And so he targeted the electronics department. There's an Apple display there with iPads and iPhones and MacBooks and all of that. And he grabs like posts, anything that's loose, to try to smash the glass on this display case. Then he sits on the floor and he tries kicking it out with his feet. He goes up, he headbutts an employee of the Target store. And nobody does anything because the employees are told to back off. It's my contention that we have too many wussified people who weren't able or willing to do anything about this. And then you see the guy take this estimated 150-pound display case, and he starts rolling it down the aisle to the escalator, so desperate to smash it, to get whatever's inside. He shoves it down the escalator. There are two people near the bottom of the escalator, thank goodness, because if they'd been up higher on the escalator, they likely would have been killed, mowed down by this display case that was sliding down at a breakneck speed down the escalator. Then you see a cut to another surveillance camera, and the guy is confronted by a loss prevention guy with Target. And that guy can't do anything. You're not allowed to. And he walks out of the store with all of these everything he was able to steal, stuff in the duffel bags. Then he's in West Seattle. And when I said that maybe some men should have stepped up in that Target store, that's what happened in West Seattle. This guy tried breaking into a car, and as he was prowling a car in the neighborhood, two guys pinned him down, held him until police got there. This guy goes and appears before a judge, long criminal history that includes terroristic threats, came up here from Texas because we have become a magnet destination for drug vagrants around the country. He comes up here from Texas, has this long criminal history, goes before a judge after terrorizing, headbutting people in a Target store for 15 minutes. 19 hours later, he's released and back walking the streets. I mean, it's simply unbelievable, where he then committed more crimes. One of the big questions that I and everybody else has been asking the last couple of days is, why no police response? How can somebody roam around a Target store for 15 minutes in the middle of downtown Seattle and there's no police response? And we have just gotten in the last hour a statement from Sean Whitcomb with Seattle Police. And initially, Sergeant Whitcomb said that they thought it was simply a shoplift and they had other higher priority calls, and so they didn't respond to the Target as in as timely a fashion. And by the time they found out the seriousness of this guy's rampage, it was too late. So that was the word the last couple of days. And there's been a lot of criticism that this was not immediately a higher priority when there were literally scores of people who were calling 911, explaining what this guy was doing. You know, to me, sliding a 150-pound cabinet down an escalator that has people on it should be assault with a deadly weapon. We have just gotten an updated statement from Seattle Police Sergeant Sean Whitcomb. It is just 1.5 lines. And what he says simply is, the community deserves and should expect better. We are reviewing this incident and will apply lessons learned to future service requests. The Seattle Police Department has responded to over 203,000 calls for service to date this year. And I'm told that Sergeant Whitcomb is going to come on with Ron and Don this afternoon because they've been asking a lot of these questions as well. So Sergeant Whitcomb with Seattle Police will be on with Ron and Don later this afternoon, and you can hear their latest perspective on this terror rampage at the downtown Seattle Target store. Okay, you are up to date on this horrible tragedy in Burien, a tragedy in Skyway, a 22-year-old woman shot in the head while driving. Those shooters remain at large, and that's the latest on the Target rampage. You are up to date. That is your big lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Okay, we're going to check the news for you, and then we'll count down our favorite sound bites of the day. Awesome audio coming up here on the Dory Monson Show. I tell you what, I like Sergeant Ryan Abbott with King County Sheriffs. That's, you know, I told him, I said, we deal with an incredibly broad spectrum of spokespeople for not only police agencies, but, you know, fire and all of that. And the ones who are responsive and are willing to answer questions, they're just golden. And, you know, we've had, you know, like Ed Troyer's great down in Pierce County. Urquhart was fantastic when he was the King County's spokesman before he became sheriff. Ryan Abbott's great. I will say the one thing that frustrates me, not anything to do with Ryan, with Sergeant Abbott, but when I ask the question, what's the citizenship status of the people involved? They're not even allowed to ask. And he said, I'll have to talk to the sheriff about that, because this is a policy decision made by Dow Constantine and the sheriff. And in Seattle, it's Durkin and the city council. We cannot ask citizenship status with these violent crimes. And then we always have this fake news about, you know, undocumenteds commit crimes at a lower rate. We don't have any data because we can't even ask the question. We're not allowed to even ask the question. How do you solve a problem if you cannot laser in on the source of that problem. And in this case, it's gangs, it's illegals, but we're not even allowed to ask as governmental agencies, because the people in the county council and in leadership, they have said, no, we're sanctuary. We're sanctuary. We won't even ask. But you cannot solve a problem if you don't know exactly what you're dealing with. One listener sent me a My Northwest story that I posted back in April when those two teenage girls were killed down in Burien. I had the mayor of Burien, Jimmy Mata, on the show. And he told me the same thing. They're a sanctuary city, and they don't know the citizenship status of the people who commit crimes down in Burien. Well, how do you solve a problem if you don't know exactly what the problem is? And it's my contention that one of the reasons our sanctuary cities tend to have the very worst crime problems is because, of course, if you are already breaking laws by being in this country illegally, and then you have to figure out where you're going to go that is going to be the path of least resistance for you, of course, the Puget Sound region is where you go. Seattle, sanctuary. King County, sanctuary. Burien, sanctuary. Everything's sanctuary. So, of course. But please, can we stop the lie? And I'm going to beg all of my colleagues in the media who keep repeating this lie that undocumented commit crimes at a lower rate. Because what we have proven is there is zero data because nobody asked the question about who is undocumented. That is simply a lie. And a bunch of listeners try to tell me that every time I talk about illegals. I got politicians who try to tell me that, and they don't have any data. So if nothing else, we have once again revealed a grand lie that our political leaders have tried to foist upon us. And with that as mere prelude, let's get to our favorite sound bites of the day.
This is Doreen Monson's Awesome Audio Clips of the Day.
And our Awesome Audio is brought to you by the wonderful folks at Brown Bear Car Wash. Okay, number three, and this is one of the, you know, worthless politicians I'm talking about. King County Council Chair Joe McDermott, who went on Twitter last night when this woman was innocently gunned down in Burien. And he tweeted, "Tragedy in Burien today. My heart goes out to the shooting victim and her family and friends. We must address gun violence." And before we even knew that the shooters were allegedly ganged up, at noon today, before that news broke, I said, obviously, this is a gang problem. It's likely an illegal problem. And yet Joe McDermott says it's a gun problem. And so he's introduced legislation to post a sign in gun stores talking about how dangerous guns are. It's idiocy that is beyond my comprehension.
Number three.
And this would require signage at points of sale and discharge, i.e. retail outlets and firing ranges, about the health effects of owning a firearm, having a firearm on the premises, and the number for the crisis connection line if you or someone you know is experiencing depression or contemplating suicide.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, I'm sure these two 17-year-old gang members went to a gun store, and if a sign had been posted, they would have said to each other, oh, maybe we shouldn't get a gun and go shoot people. Look at the sign. Yeah, signs are really effective, councilmen. With a gang member, 17-year-olds who are too young to buy a gun. It's a great, brilliant solution. But then listen to this.
When vehicle deaths were increasing, we responded by not only putting seatbelts in cars, but requiring their use by putting airbags in cars. We need to respond in the same way to this public health crisis with a variety of ways to protect and make people safe.
Yes, a sign in a gun store is just like a seatbelt and an airbag. That's as dumb as they get. Okay, number one, Jack Black. He got his Hollywood Walk of Fame start today. How did he finish his little speech?
Number one.
Except for Donald Trump's a piece of... Peace out, love you!
Nice. Today's Science coming up next. Down the stretch we come. What a day. Show, what a day. All right, we got a lot to do as we present today's edition of...
Today's Sign that the end is near.
Make this Today's Sign triple shot for you. Because I love... Let's start in Maine. A lobster named Roscoe was the first to experience a technique that a lobster pound owner, Charlotte Gill, is hoping will be a more humane way of executing lobsters. Let me take you to Maine, where CBS explains what they're doing to these lobsters on death row.
Lobsters in a Maine restaurant are getting sedated with marijuana before they are steamed. Charlotte Gill, the owner of Charlotte's legendary lobster pound, tells the Mount Desert Islander, if we are going to take a life, we have to do it humanely as possible, and that lobster meat tastes better if the animal is less stressed before dying. Gill says she sedated her first lobster, Roscoe, she named him, by placing him in a covered box with some water at the bottom and blowing marijuana smoke into the water. She says Roscoe became calmer, not using his claws as weapons. He was released into the ocean as a reward for being the first in the experiment. Right now, customers have to request that their lobster get the stoner sedation, but Charlotte says she hopes to soon sedate all lobsters before cooking them.
Yeah, I've heard of rock lobster, but these are stoned lobsters, apparently. I'm guessing if you gave them a choice, if they were sentient beings, the choice is being, hey, we're about to kill you, but we'll get you high first, or we won't kill you, but you got to stay stone cold sober. Which would the lobsters choose? I think there are some humans that was, oh, I can get high? Wait, you'll do what afterwards? Yeah, I don't care what you do afterwards. Yeah, I'll get high. So that's what they're doing to relax the lobsters back in Maine. Today's Sign story, number two, it's the story of a guy named, a person named Zayna Zayim. Z-Z-Y-Y-M is how you spell the last name. Z-Z-Y-Y-M. Dana Zim. Dana's very upset because when Dana went to get a passport, one of the questions they ask is, are you a man or a woman? Dana Zim does not like that question.
I have to assert what's right for me. So I wrote I think on the form instead of male or female because that bottom line says under penalty of perjury.
Okay. And Dana says Dana doesn't want to perjure Dana's self. I never know what to do with the pronouns here. Because even though Dana lived life as a man, Zim is a Navy veteran, but now identifies as intersex and claims I am not male or female. And a judge has now ruled against the feds, saying that denying Zim a passport was wrong. They said, well, if it's going to force this person to lie, then we're just going to have to create a third category on the passports as well. Here is an attorney, Paul Castillo.
Dana is a U.S. citizen and a military veteran, and it's inconsistent with Dana's rights, and Dana shouldn't have to choose.
So the attorney went on to say it's time for Dana Zim and other non-binary citizens to be recognized and respected for who they are. Zim first sued the Obama administration because they denied passport applications for the same reason. So this isn't something new. You can't pin this one on Trump. I'm sorry to tell you, because the Obama administration did the same thing. And then finally in today's sign, one of the great Southern rock bands of all time.
Lord, I was born in the
land. Dickie Betts, the founding Allman Brothers band guitarist, has been hospitalized following a freak accident. Dickie Betts wrote and was the lead singer on Ramblin' Man. He was in his backyard playing with the family dog when he slipped and cracked his head. That caused bleeding from the brain. The 74-year-old has been sedated at a local hospital down in Florida and is going to undergo brain surgery tomorrow to relieve the swelling. They had to cancel an Allman Brothers tour last month after Dickie Betts suffered a mild stroke at his home. But he said he was feeling better, ready to go back on tour, but now has slipped and fallen. I like Ramblin' Man. Let me close out the show with what I think is my favorite Allman Brothers song here.
Crossroads, sing the congo. Yeah. Gypsy flies from coast to coast.
When I was 13, my first girlfriend was named Melissa. I remember I loved this song for that reason alone. Good stuff. So anyway, hope Dickie Betts from the Allman Brothers, surgery tomorrow for swelling on the brain. But just another one of those many, many people who provided the soundtrack for our lives. All of that is today's sign. The end is near. I gotta get out of here. I've said everything that I have to say for today. But I'll go home and I'll think up a bunch of new stuff for tomorrow's Friday extravaganza. Coach Pete Carroll will join me between 12:30 and 1 o'clock tomorrow. We'll preview that Seahawks home opener against the Dallas Cowboys that you will hear Sunday afternoon.
With sweet Melissa.
Right here on your home of the Seahawks, 97.3 Cairo FM. So Pete Carroll will join me tomorrow afternoon. Ron and Don show's coming up next. And I will see you back here tomorrow. High noon. And
what would you say you do here?
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.